You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are speaking with Mr. Jacob Wedderburn Day, the co-founder and CEO of Stasher, the world's first sharing economy solution for luggage storage, aiming to revolutionize the way we travel. Certainly sounds like an interesting business, and Mr. Wedderburn Day, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
And you're more than welcome. Our pleasure. So for starters, how did you know quitting the Bank of England grad scheme was the right move to make?
Oh, it's a good question. I get asked all the time. And I guess for us, there are a few key things. I mean, so for the context of everyone listening, Stasher, the business we co-founded, we sign up shops and hotels. We have this network of shops and hotels, and they have storage space. They make that space available to customers to store things, and mostly it's luggage. It's tourists who are looking somewhere to drop their luggage off when they've checked out, but before they're flying. So that's kind of what we're all about. It's like an alternative to traditional lockers, but it's cheaper. And the cool thing is it's really scalable. And for us, so I used to have this. I had a position on the grad team at the Bank of England, and people sort of fixate on, like, you know, how did you know when to quit the job and start this? And the truth is, I'd started Stasher before I had the grad scheme job. We'd been running the sort of prototype version for a while, and around the time I started the job, we also started our investment search for Stasher. And it was sort of a coincidence of timings. We had the investment offer pretty soon into starting, and for us, for me at least, I felt like having the investment kind of de-risked the whole process. The worst thing that was going to happen was we were going to run this business for a year, and then it failed. But at least, you know, I'm not sort of putting my own personal finances like heavily at risk. We found someone who believes in the business, prepared to back us. We have the runway. We're going to get good experience out of it, whether or not it succeeds. And obviously, the best case it succeeds, and you get to pursue the entrepreneurial dream. So that for me was it was actually an easier decision than it maybe seemed.
And sending a little inspiration out there to the audience, you've got to love that. When did you feel reassured that your idea was valid and worth investing time behind?
Again, I think the investment actually was a key part of this. So, in fact, when we started, the cool thing about the model was it was revenue generating from day one. So we had real customers. We could sort of get their feedback and assess how they like the business. And so we were always able to sort of iterate based on real customer feedback. And I remember the day that we made our first sort of £100 in one day. My co-founder and I both got really excited, and we thought, you know, this is it. This is the model that's going to make us a big success. But I think really the true validation came when we pitched for angel investment, had our first offer, and we sort of, you know, we had this external investor who believed in us, who saw the sort of potential, the potential of the vision of what we were building here, and I think that was kind of what gave us the reassurance that, you know, we're onto something here, and it's worth pursuing.
Jacob, how important would you say market research is in your contemplation in starting a business?
Oh, it's essential. You know, completely. It's so important. And the reason I feel that way is because it's very, very easy to convince yourself that your product is great or that your product is something that people will buy. It's a whole different story to take it to market and see, do people actually want to buy it? It's the best, like, litmus test for a business, for a product. And essentially, it's the only one that matters. It's can you get people using it, and do they like it? And you need to do your sort of market research. And I mean, in our case, we took it very literally. We built a prototype and let people use it and opened it up to the general public and watched the way that people behaved around it, because we were keen to learn, you know, how is there actually a need for this? I mean, we had the arguments ourselves. We were able to articulate why we thought people would need our service, but it's a different thing to actually make the product and see do people really use it. And I mean, we did a bunch of surveys as well. We went and stood outside station lockers and surveyed people just to sort of build up material for our business plan and our pitch deck. But actually, the key story around market research for us was really that when we started, we were much more literally the Airbnb of luggage. We used to have people store bags in our own flats, in our own homes, and we had all our friends and family. We signed them all up and said, you know, open up your sort of your attics and your spare rooms to store luggage. And fantastically, people did. Customers did come to our flats and they stored bags, and we got to chat to them. But through that model, we figured out there were a couple of key problems. The main one was that you're opening up your flat for just sort of 24 hours is actually, it's a bit of an inconvenience. You know, it's a hassle to sort of get in and out and let people in and out twice in one day. And it would have worked if the model was much longer term, if people were storing for like months at a time, because then you can book a drop-off date and a pickup date. But if it's all within the same day, it's actually way less convenient. And that sort of forced us to pivot a little bit. And it's not really a pivot, but what we did instead was start signing up shops and hotels, because we reasoned these are businesses that have space open anyway. You know, it's space is an asset that they're not monetizing, and it doesn't cost them anything to open that up. There's going to be people manning the desks or manning the receptions anyway. So why not? Why not open it up to them instead? And that was key for us. I mean, I don't think the business would be anywhere near the scale it is today if we were still trying to persuade people to store things in their homes. I think having businesses on board instead meant that, you know, you get all the benefits of CCTV and scale, and they're sort of, I think it just works better. And we wouldn't have got that if we hadn't prototyped the original business using our flats and talked to our customers and sort of learned from the way that they used us.
Quite insightful and most helpful. Today we're joined by Mr. Jacob Wedderburn Day, the co-founder and CEO of Stasher, the world's first sharing economy solution for luggage storage, aiming to revolutionize the way we travel here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Now, Jacob, many entrepreneurs embark on this journey alone. How did having a co-founder change your approach?
I mean, so this is, I can't speak for the counterfactual. This is the only business I've ever run, and obviously I set it up with my co-founder, Anthony. I wouldn't have it any other way. I think for me, co-founder support has been essential. For one thing, we have sort of complementary skills. I think the whole process of starting a business alone would be far more daunting, and actually it's been a great source of support on the journey to always sort of have Anthony to turn to at the desk next to me to sense check ideas and to sort of make decisions with. I think the sheer volume of decisions you start having to make, especially as you get further into the journey and you start having staff working for you and employees who also need sort of help making decisions, it becomes a lot of work. And I think having someone to share that burden with is invaluable. I've really appreciated it. But that's sort of the practical side. I guess the other thing to say on our behalf is, so Anthony and I were friends from university. We were literally college roommates in our final year. And it's been a lot more fun, I think, working on a business together. You know, it's made the whole process really enjoyable. It's made it not just a learning experience, but, you know, a shared, really enjoyable experience. I mean, I'd recommend starting a business with a co-founder to anyone. I just think sometimes you need that sounding board. You know, you need someone else who knows as much as you do, but can bring a different perspective to how you make decisions. But then at the same time, I've never started anything solo, and it obviously works fine for lots of people. The only other advice I'd give on the front of on the topic of co-founders is it's really important to make sure that, you know, you have complementary skills and you can both bring something to the team. I think there's definitely space for, you know, two business sort of sided co-founders. Ideally, you'll want a technical co-founder. You need that balance of essential skills to run a business between your co-founding team. And that's going to really help in the long run.
Hey, good advice in those regards. Now, after just 2 years, you're already operating in 85 cities across the globe and recently launched in the U.S., Australia, and Japan. What is the main struggle that you faced in launching an international business?
Oh, it's a good question. I guess I'd have to say marketing in lots of different countries is a challenge. And I think we took for granted a little bit how perhaps how well we knew the sort of UK, the UK business environment, the UK scene. We've built our business out of London, so we know London very well. We're very confident in our position in the London market. Now, the beautiful thing about our model is it scales really nicely on the supply side. So we've got locations, we've got our network, as you said, live in 85 cities, which is really, really cool. And it certainly lends itself to all kinds of sort of partner marketing opportunities, referral marketing, which is great. But finding customers in 85 different countries is absolutely a challenge. And I guess that's not even to mention, you know, other cultural considerations that come from launching in different countries. We've seen it in a number of cases that sales tactics that work well in the UK just sort of fall flat in other environments. Then something's really worked that wouldn't work here, and it's a balancing act. And I guess you learn a lot as you go about it. But it's certainly a challenge. It's one of the big challenges that we're facing, really. But I'm excited about it because I think, you know, the opportunity that we have here is huge, and the customer base that we have is a base of travelers. And the idea is that the repeat opportunity here could be massive, and we need to be in all these cities to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, dealing with so many different cultures in your marketing endeavors for certain, and from my experience, would be a huge challenge. It certainly seems like you've adjusted very, very well, so congratulations on that. Well done. Lastly, if you could give your past self one piece of advice, what would that be in conclusion today?
Excellent question. I guess for us, getting the balance right between who to hire and when to outsource. It's a challenge for any business. I think that's something personally I do differently. To give a specific example, one of the things we did was we outsourced our tech early on. Once we validated the prototype, we outsourced our tech to expedite sort of making it faster. But I actually think tech is so essential to our business that having it in-house earlier would have been really, really valuable. So It's making that trade-off between when do you hire someone and bring something in-house? When do you just outsource it to get it done more efficiently? Is it even the most efficient way to do it, to outsource something? It's never an easy question to answer. I mean, with hindsight, that's something I'd do differently if I could go back and sort of give myself one piece of advice. That's the most obvious one. I can think of for now. That's, I guess, kind of how would you do things differently. Otherwise, in terms of advice, I think the other thing I tell myself earlier on in the journey is make sure you enjoy it as much as possible, because at the end of the day, it's businesses don't last forever, and it changes so much day by day, and there's such a wealth of experience that you get out of it. And I think it's quite easy to get sucked into sort of the ups and downs and feel really positive about the ups and quite negative about the downs. And obviously it's your job as an entrepreneur to be as optimistic as possible at all times and always sort of present a positive front, but it can be quite challenging if things aren't going so well and you feel challenged by things, you feel like you're up against obstacles. But even those, I think they're just, you know, it's all part of the sort of big experience. And I think there's so much to get out of the journey and so much to enjoy that actually it's worth really savoring every moment. Hope that doesn't sound too corny, but
not at all. It's all good and authentic, and that's what we appreciate. Good stuff here today, Jacob. Really has been great to have had you. If folks wanted to get more information on Stasher and take advantage of your services worldwide, where can they get further details?
Oh, absolutely. The best thing to do is visit the website. That's stasher.com. Website should have all the information. It's also the place to go if you need to book storage in any one of our cities. We're live in London, Paris, New York, Sydney, and 85 other places besides. So hopefully wherever you're traveling, you should be able to find us. If you want more information, I blog over at Medium. If you search for Stasher, I'll come up. I'm always writing about either Stasher itself or various sort of aspects of the entrepreneurial journey. So we're also happy for people to get in touch.
Well, we all here at EPN certainly wish you nothing but the best and many years of success. And thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Much appreciated.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And you're more than welcome. We've been speaking with Mr. Jacob Wedderburn Day, co-founder and CEO of Stasher, the world's first sharing economy solution for luggage storage, aiming to revolutionize the way we travel. And for all the details, visit Stasher.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.